Habichuelas no se pueden comer.
Una libra de arroz y una cuarta de café.
A nadie le importa qué piensa usted.
Será porque aquí
no hablamos inglés.
Ah, ah.
Es verdad.
Ah, ah.
Es verdad.
Ah, ah.
Welcome back. You're listening to KPFK 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara, and on the web on kpfk.org. You're listening to Eric Mann and Manuel Criollo. We're, you know, you're becoming your team of the voices from the front lines here. And the next segment we're going to have Professor Fernando Guerra from Loyola Marymount University. He's with the Center for the Study of Los Angeles, talking to us about last week's mayoral runoff election that we had, where we had five major candidates, where Antonio Villaraigosa and James Hahn will have a repeat of their last struggle for the mayoral campaign. So welcome to the show, Professor Guerra.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Of course. So, you know, first I want to, you know, hear from you about what your impressions of what happened last week. I know in the past you were talking, you pretty much read the elections, like you knew what's going to happen in terms of Antonio coming first, James Hahn and Bob Hertzberg surprisingly had a really huge struggle among themselves to try to gain mainly the white electorate, it seems, and Bernard Parks, you know, again having a very solid base of group of people that supported him. So give us what do you think came out of this last election?
Well, you know, I think it was a pretty easy call that Antonio was going to come in first. If you start tracking the polls, not that polls are everything, but they certainly are good indicators, Antonio, every new poll kept showing him climbing. And unfortunately for the mayor, every new poll kept showing him declining. There was not a single poll that was done that where he increased his support. He either maintained it or it continued to reduce. So he started out in the high 20s with a very first poll that was done in early summer and ended up in the, you know, teens, upper teens in the last polls that were done before election. Then you saw, of course, Hertzberg really move up. So the biggest surprise was Bob Hertzberg's, you know, going from about 3% of the vote when he first declared his candidacy to almost taking the mayor out. And so he clearly ran the best campaign. You know, it just petered out at the end. And two things that show that on election day. Number one was that James Hahn did much better than either Hertzberg or Villaraigosa with the absentee vote. Okay. Then in our exit poll that we did at Loyola Marymount University, in the very first wave, and what we mean by the first wave is we collect all the surveys that people filled out or responded to by 1 o'clock. And in that, you can see that Hertzberg is actually ahead of Hahn by 4 points. And Antonio is up in the 40%. And I know that the LA Times in their first wave, while their numbers weren't exactly like ours, also showed Antonio having a higher number that he ended up with, and Hertzberg ahead of Hahn. And then what you see is Hahn overtakes Hertzberg in that second wave. What that indicates to me is that the Hahn people were tracking who, you know, over the phone calls that they make, who was going to vote for them. And then as the day went on, they would see if those people had voted. And if not, they called them up or even went and took them to the polls. That means that the Hahn team was very well organized and very strategic. They were organized to get the absentee ballot out, and they were organized to get the late vote out. But, you know, on election day, Hertzberg got more votes. It's the absentees that put Hahn over. So it was that knowing how to run campaigns, and he's running for 6 years, six different terms over, you know, 20-some-odd years, knowing how to run those campaigns that is what put the Hahn team into second place.
Well, you know, I think the interesting thing for us, as you know, both me and Eric work with the Labor Community Strategy Center, and we're organizers, and we're primarily our work has been to pressure candidates to progressive, you know, demands. And we sort of are running in this kind of dilemma that both James Hahn and Antonio Villaraigosa represent on some tip a very liberal, progressive candidates, obviously both of them having different nuances. But it's going to be very hard to move both of these candidates when they're going to try to go outreach basically to the Hertzberg vote, which is a much more moderate, much more conservative white vote than, say, necessarily the demands that we'd like to see around issues around transportation and other issues.
No, I mean, I agree with you that if, in fact, if people define that who's going to win the election is who gets the majority of the Hertzberg vote, it's going to then have to move to the middle and further to the right. I mean, first of all, Hertzberg wasn't that conservative. You take a look at some of his stuff when he was Speaker and all that. He was still, I know some people define him as a moderate Democrat and business Democrat. He was still more, more of a Democrat than many other Democrats that are up in Sacramento. And so, it's just that they had the conservative white Republican vote had nowhere to go in this election. I thought Parks would receive a little bit more of it, just because, he is actually one of the more business-friendly council members, and he's also, obviously, in terms of public safety, the former police chief, but he didn't resonate as much as I thought he would in the Valley. This is still in terms of voters, a much more progressive town. If you put together the progressive coalition, you will win in this election. You can win without getting a majority of the Republican vote in LA. They're only 20% of the vote. You win a majority, that's still only 10% of the total vote. You can maybe lose 60-40, and you still got, that 9 versus 11. You would be the Republicans. If you split the Republican vote 60-40, you get 9% of the total vote, and your opponent gets 11%. That's 2 points that you can make up in all kinds of other places. So, obviously, the closer an election is, every group becomes more strategic, more important. Right now, Antonio starts off with a tremendous advantage. He had 33 versus 23% for the mayor. That's a 10-point difference. 4 years ago, he only had a 5-point difference, 30 to 25. In our exit poll, when we asked those people if the runoff is between Antonio and the mayor, who you vote for, 57% said they would vote for Antonio, 30% said they would vote for the mayor. The others were undecided. And this cut across Antonio last Tuesday got a majority of the white vote that would vote for him, a majority of the Latino vote, a majority of the black vote. On all of those, he was the number one candidate in the runoff question. So it's basically now Antonio's election to lose, in a sense, because he's got every single advantage.
Hi, Fernando. This is Eric, man.
How are you?
Thanks for all your good work. I want to get to two related questions. I mean, one of the dilemmas is that there still is an analogy between the Democratic Party strategy at the national level and their strategy at the L.A. level. For instance, as Manuel was saying, we call for a moratorium on all highway spending, on all train and rail spending, and the defense of a civil rights consent decree. There's a federal bill right now trying to get rid of consent decrees, and while Antonio was originally one of the people who was a witness in our case against the MTA, since he's been in office, he has never supported protecting, for instance, $1.5 billion in money for the bus system, although he went out and got almost $1 billion for the Pasadena Rail Line. Secondly, the fight over police. I mean, when are the progressives going to get to the very simple point that L.A. does not need more police? L.A. needs the decriminalization of all the minor crimes that Chief Bratton thinks are the broken window theory to catching, serious violent criminals, who are very, very few, really. So if Antonio and Jim Hahn run on a pro-police platform, if Hahn accuses Villaraigosa of not voting for the half-cent sales tax, which we're glad he didn't, therefore being soft on police, if Hahn tries his, pull out the 1911 drug issue or whatever he's going to try to do on Antonio, and then Antonio tries once again to say that he wants to build, I don't know if you've seen his platform, a red line to the sea, which is like $350 million a mile to build, in direct violation of the consent decree. It's as if the definition of progressive is so vague that we say he can run as a progressive, but he's not going to run on the two issues we think are most important right now. Well, three. One is the deterioration of the public schools. Second is the deterioration of the police department in terms of its behavior. And third is the failure to enforce a federal consent decree. Now, I don't ask you as a person who analyzes elections. I mean, that's our job as organizers. But I'm just asking perhaps to comment on this dilemma of the running to the right that seems to be a pattern in these elections.
It's the dilemma being faced by progressives in every single election, not only national, but just about every municipal election as well, in that, you know, we know what the issues are, but yet, you know, to get the vote, to be in power. So it becomes the question is, hey, listen, progressive organizers and voters, bear with me, let me get into power, and then I will be able to make some changes. I can't do anything for you out of power, okay? And so it's, you know, do we buy that line? I mean, I do think that Antonio is probably the most progressive major candidate you're going to get in a major city anywhere if you look across the country. You know, if you look at what's happening in whether it's New York or Chicago or Atlanta or, you know, any of these cities, none of them, in terms of what they've said in the past, what they've done in the past, and where they come from, would be defined as progressive as Antonio. Now you say, okay, well, that's great, but what about the particular issues? You know, police. You know, I couldn't agree with you more about what we need is more public safety, which doesn't necessarily translate into more police, but that's the easy message. And why do mayoral candidates, council candidates concentrate so much on police? Number one, it's their number one budget item. It's the largest item on the budget is public safety. Number two, it's the one area where local politicians can make a difference in terms of crime. And so they always want to be the crime busters, et cetera. And, you know, especially progressive candidates, especially minority candidates, are susceptible to the anti-crime being pictured as soft on crime. And, in fact, that's what happened to Antonio last time. And so strategically, tactically then, what do you do? It's the number one budget item. It's the number one area where you can make a change, and you don't want to be seen soft on crime. And so, you know, tactically in a campaign, you say, hey, you know, what it takes to win a campaign is different than what it takes to govern. And so right now to win a campaign, I have to talk about public safety. I have to talk about increasing costs because that's the only thing voters understand in terms of fighting crime. The more nuanced you get, the more complicated you get, it's too difficult for me to explain that. So in terms of substance, I think Han and Antonio are pretty similar in a lot of different areas, but symbolically, I think Antonio is saying, listen, I understand the progressive issues more than Han. I truly am a progressive. I truly am a guy from the unions. I will engage from that perspective to a much greater degree. And that's the call that voters are going to have to make.
Well, I want to sort of, there's a lot of things that you said were really good. I'm really interested in seeing two things from you back. I mean, there's going to be two major blocks that everybody's going to try to search for. One, on a very good note, I hope, is inside the black community, given that they voted such a hard block with Bernard Parks. Last time, I think there was this huge disappointment inside the black community that they had thrown their support for James Hahn, given the legacy of his own father, of Kenny Hahn, and sort of implicitly said, hey, we have these set of demands, but it wasn't always very clear what those demands were, particularly around the backing of Bernard Parks. How the negotiation is going to happen there, either between James Hahn or Antonio Villaraigosa, to win that block of votes, which tend to be more progressive, or tend to be a little bit more liberal and democratic? And then how do you weigh out the other potential, which is the Hertzberg vote, which is such a much more strong and solid vote, that given that they're primarily sort of more affluent, more white, and definitely are the folks that everybody can count on that will be at the voting polls in May. How do you see all these two sort of forces, and how will the Villaraigosa and Hahn camp be negotiating with them?
I mean, the reason that James Hahn was able to win last time is he was able to put exactly that coalition together. South LA African American voters and, you know, Valley voters. An incredible alliance because it's really unsustainable, and now you see it really breaking down. And again, it's a dilemma of any progressive candidate. How do you keep your base progressive? A lot of, specifically a lot of minorities, and, you know, the black vote has been one of the most progressive votes around, and increasingly the Latino vote has become increasingly more progressive, more pro-union. The Latino vote is more pro-union than even union households. When you take a look at very specific union initiatives that have happened in California and in LA. And when you know, the dilemma then is, how do I keep my base and not have a backlash again from those that would be opposed to that base? And that's always something tricky. You got to speak in code. You got to be able to, you know, try to emphasize one thing to one group and then emphasize another thing to the other group. But then with the, you know, nightly news and the newspaper coverage that gives it to everybody, and then also the fact that you're always having your opponents do opposition research that will blast that, it becomes, you then really begin to water down what you say. And then we get into the whole thing that, you know, campaigns aren't really talking about substance, because if you do, you may gain a vote, but you lose another one. So you didn't progress in terms of trying to get the majority of the vote. The LA Times poll had Mayor Han getting more black votes than Antonio. Our poll, where we oversampled African Americans, we had Antonio getting more African American votes.
And what was the vote?
We both had Parks at around 50%. Okay. Then we had Antonio around 30% of the African American vote, and Han with only 15. The Times had them about, again, Parks getting about 50%, with the mayor getting about 25% of the African American vote, and Antonio about 19 or 20. And I may be off, because I'm talking from the top of my head, I may be off 1 or 2 points, but the basic trend was this: Parks, Antonio, and then Han in our poll. Parks, Han, and then Antonio in the LA Times poll. We focused on what we call homogeneous black precincts. We went to, because it's our belief that most African Americans still vote and live in heavily African American precincts. So that's where we focused, trying to get our African American respondents. And that's why we think that Antonio is in much better shape than he was 4 years ago.
Let me interrupt with one more thing, because we only have 2 minutes to go, Dr. Guerra, and you're doing great. I wanted you to end with the irony of Miguel Contreras and Gilbert Cedillo being for Han. I know both of them very well for more than decades, it seems. And even though I heard it, to see on election night Miguel, who had just worked for Martin Ludlow, just worked for Karen Bass, had worked for Antonio, they're very close, to stand up and say, we got to turn out the vote for Han, which he did.
Right.
How do you
explain? He saved Han, man.
That's
he
right.
He saved Han in the primary. You won't be able to save him in the general, though, I believe.
Why? Why don't we end with that?
Well, because, number one, Antonio got more union household votes than Han did. Okay, and even it's part of it is Miguel's own success. He has spent $2.5 million in the last 3.5 years telling union households to vote for Antonio. 4 years ago as mayor, 2 years ago as council member, he's been so successful now when they come back and say, hey, don't vote for Antonio, vote for Han, union households are saying, what? You know, so there's, you know, that's number one. Number two, you know, union members are smart. They get it intuitively. So I, without a doubt, the union household members, a majority of them are going to go for Antonio. And I don't care how much Miguel spent, he's just not going to be able to do that. Now, they got themselves into a difficulty, you know, but in a way, if you look at it, it's a win-win situation for Miguel. Number one, if Han wins, hey, he was very much a part of the whole reason that he won. If he doesn't, he's got a very pro-union person. There's no way Antonio's going to turn his back on the unions. And so he gets someone there either way. And so it's, you know, that's a difficult thing. The other thing about Gil and about a lot of other Latinos who've endorsed the mayor, it's sort of like, well, what good is your endorsement if your district overwhelmingly went for Antonio? What did you deliver for the mayor other than just symbolically, you know, because substantively I could show you in your precinct where you live, your own neighbors didn't take your advice. They went against you. And so I think it's problematic for these type of elected officials to continuously endorse and be on the losing side. I think in isolation, one time, you know, maybe two times, but if you're constantly backing a loser, it shows some type of a detachment to your base and to the interest of your base. The senatorial district for Gil Steele overwhelmingly went for Antonio. Latinos overwhelmingly went for Antonio. So they didn't catch the message that Gil was trying to communicate to us, and I'm not even sure what that message is.
We'll have to end it here. This is a great interview. We'll have you back since the election. Well, it will be on May 17th. We'd like to talk to you since then.
Hey, and keep up the good job. I enjoy the show, you guys.
Okay. Well, every Monday at 4, tell your friends.
All right.
Voices from the Frontline. We're here with Professor Fernando Guerra from the Loyola Marymount University Center for the Study of Los Angeles. We'll be back after a short break with Maya Rockymore from the Congressional Black Caucus.
Ando sin prisa, pero tu lentitud me coleriza. Y es que no vengan con Loiza, no, no, ahora ella quiere hacer un mensaje. Soy parte de una trilogía, gracias a donde tu mundo es igual. Si estás tropezando, perdona. Le entiendo, te sabe disculpar. Me como justifica tanto mal. Es que tu historia es vergonzosa, entre otras cosas. Cambiarte la cadena por esposa. No todos somos iguales, en términos legales. Y eso está probado en los tribunales. En lo claro, la justicia se obtiene con cacao. Oye, por eso estamos como estamos. Y de cada